Just as we sat down to begin the meditation, I had a just a recollection of a discourse, a short discourse of the Buddha's, or a saying of the Buddha's, and so the Buddha saying that if you knew as I knew the benefits of wholesome action, you would not let a meal go by, or any time that one ate go by, without sharing at least a little bit of food for the even as much as giving it to ants or insects, just to be giving something away, just to be giving something for benefit to others, creating wholesome action. It's the sort of this the Buddha is sort of emphasizing that the benefit of just creating causes for wholesome action, goodness, and of course generosity being a foundation, but there are many, many ways that we create wholesome action, and to not miss the opportunity, just the benefits of that wholesomeness, of that goodness, are great, are far-reaching. And particularly when we do it as really second nature, then it begins to restructures our whole outlook of the world, outlook of how we view ourselves, the people who we live with, share the world with. So that that sense of really taking each and every opportunity to cultivate the quality of skillfulness and wholesome mental states that are surrounding our action, our activity, even if it's extremely ordinary and prosaic, eating a meal, preparing a meal, and just I think that's one of the reasons. So I say, like in Asia or Thailand or several many Asian countries, when they actually do prepare meals, most meals, they'll actually take something of their food and share it with, and set it out for spirits, the Buddha, or whatever. I mean, it's just sort of, and if one looks at it as a strictly utilitarian, then it's kind of useless. Why would you set something out and not eat it yourself? Set it out for the Buddha every year, for every time we eat for 20 years, and never saw him come and eat it once. You know? But That isn't the point. It's the point is the creation of that uplifting of the heart to something, recollecting something more than our own benefit, our own well-being, our own interest, and that really creates a whole different mental state that our well-being is connected to the well-being of all beings around us, and to when we establish that, then there's very much more expansive states of mind created, and then the recognition that the opportunities for sharing and giving don't have to come in anything extraordinary, but to actually taking the opportunities that we have, and giving doesn't even necessarily have to be material, but in terms of just keeping one's eyes open and learning how to help out with things, to give service, to be attentive to the needs of others, to give words of encouragement rather than sort of words of this cynicism, criticism, and discouragement. And to actually give words of encouragement and creating a positive outlook, or not having to look at everything that's wrong with something, or ripping something apart. It was very interesting today, going to I went to a hearing in Ukiah at the courthouse on the they're trying to establish a temporary restraining order against a CDF, Department of Forestry, so that there was trying to stop the logging that has been contracted out in Jackson State Forest. And the person who initiated that campaign several years ago, we've known for a long time, and he's consulted with me many times for establishing the whole thing, and from time to time checks in. So it was sort of an urgent call for people to show up and show their support, and went to the courthouse, and there were many people there that were concerned and interested, but we had to wait, and so getting into various conversations, and there wasn't many people who were practicing the Dhamma there, who were meditators. It was a pretty raucous sort of gathering. We had the I don't know what you call them, the kind of the constables in the courthouse, who came out several times and said, keep it down, trying to get people to. It was really noisy. I mean, it wasn't, people were just talking, but it was all very animated. But there weren't many conversations that were positive, that I was really, I took note of that as I was there. There weren't many that were positive. Most of it was actually whatever people were talking about, kind of negative. All the things that are going to go wrong, all the disasters. And it isn't as if that isn't true. I mean, certainly there's lots of room for some bleakness. But in terms of giving and in terms of creating an atmosphere of cooperation, energy, and commitment, if one's always focusing on the negative and what's wrong, then it undermines any kind of ability to commit and sustain effort and energy. So it's it's not surprising that many say forest activists get burnt out because it's hard. And I think in any kind of endeavor, the same goes in spiritual endeavor. One needs to have a certain atmosphere internally within our own mind that is kind of buoyed up and energized by that which is wholesome, is positive. Similarly, any kind of community or place of practice has to have that quality of the wholesome in order to sustain. And that doesn't mean one can't broach anything that is unpleasant or is negative, but it's sort of being able to get it in proportion, get it in balance, approach it in a way that is constructive rather than being focused on all the time, because it's easy for it to for the mind to just hone in on that. We can do that with ourselves, just in terms of honing in on all the problems we have, all the difficulties we have, all the sort of unskillful habits that we have, and forget completely that we wouldn't be interested in Dhamma or meditation or and the spiritual matters at all, if we were completely reprehensible and unredeemable. It just wouldn't happen. But it's easy to focus the shift into that which is negative. So that sense of the Buddha pointing to the benefit of putting a clear intention towards the wholesome, towards the qualities such as giving, because it has a very positive effect both on ourselves as well as on the world around us and people we live with. And that quality of again, it can say giving takes many forms. The whole aspects of precepts. Say like on an observance day, as we just did, making a determination to for a day and a night to keep the precepts, eight precepts, which are sort of the renunciant precepts, and if it's not convenient or comfortable for keeping the eight precepts, and at least on observance days or on special occasions to to really certainly try to bring up the recollection of how to maintain the precepts, the five precepts, in a way that is really clear and focused. And that and similarly, well, actually, there's one discourse where the Buddha talks about the five precepts being the five great gifts. That the keeping of and living by not taking life, not stealing, those five precepts is like a gift of security, a gift of compassion, a gift of safety that one gives to the world and all sentient beings. Which is a lovely sort of perspective. Because it's so easy sometimes for precepts and from our habitual perspective they're some kind of external rules that are forced upon us. And they just kind of cramp our style. And it's not really how they're actually configured. The Buddha, in teaching about the particularly five precepts, that those are the Buddha looking at the world with this sort of eye of compassion and saying, gee, those humans really create a lot of trouble for themselves. Maybe if they kept at least a few sort of had a few sort of boundaries, they'd create a whole lot less trouble for themselves and each other. And that's really quite, what they're for is creating a boundary that allows us to live in a way of less suffering and more happiness, which is what we want anyway. I mean, it's the fundamental bottom line human existence. How can I live in a way that I suffer less and I felt more happiness, more well-being. So that actually cultivating those qualities is certainly that leads to those precepts are a foundation for one to experience a sense of more wholesome mental states, more wholesome and qualities that lead to happiness. So that they're another form of how we conduct our life, the things that we do that create blessings, and that sense of recognizing that all of our each moment is an opportunity to sort of generate blessings in our life, and we can in very simple ways, just consciously stepping back from those intentions which are unskillful or harmful, having certain boundaries in our conduct, and then on, say, as we say, like on observance days, the moon days, to or you know, whatever works for an individual. We have certain days where we actually give ourselves opportunities to simplify our life with the say those renunciation precepts, simplifying our just eating, not refraining from, say, like an evening meal. Gives oneself an opportunity for just an extra hour of meditation. Just already without even doing anything. A very usually lighter sort of feeling. Hard to meditate on a full stomach. It gives you another hour of meditation. Hour after eating, and you've been having to get over the heaviness of the meal. So just sort of very simple things like that. Precepts of refraining from entertainment, just to take from time to time, where one isn't engaging in just various forms of distraction. Gives oneself the opportunity to make the mind more peaceful without necessarily engaging in meditation that much. It just puts the simplification of one's life. And again, it isn't something that one has to take on as a whole lifestyle, but from time to time, on an observance day or whatever day is convenient in one's life. Or certainly when people come to live in the monastery, then that is sort of how we live our life in the monastery, with that basic sort of simplicity. Helps to foster uncluttered states of mind that give one the opportunity to incline more toward the wholesome and those states of mind that are more peaceful. Oftentimes the reality, and once we give ourselves set the conditions, restrain or refrain from those sort of habitual patterns that stir the mind up. The reality is we've still got a whole sort of backlog of habits that still lead us to unwholesome mental states or scattered states of mind. So that the meditation, the actual training in meditation is so helpful and necessary for that. So, you know, we all know, having been on retreats or living in the monastery, one simplifies all of that, and then the mind gets obsessed with runs with some sort of desire, some fantasy, whether it's a food fantasy or a sexual fantasy or the mind obsessed with a whole sort of long playlist of songs that keep going over and over in the mind. And the mind is sort of seeking just that distraction and stimulation. or gets caught up in some irritation, grudge, or some sort of feeling sense of aversion, being averse to various things. And it's, you know, the mind, especially when, you know, say when everything else is simplified, then that can take on a huge sort of meaning, become very important. You know, some particular obsession with what irritating thing that somebody does, or how we perceive it as irritating. And the and that's, again, that's why it's so important to be able to undermine those, the way that the mind can obsess with its greed, hatred, and delusion so much, with almost proactively turning attention to something that is skillful, is clearly wholesome. I mean, just that sense of sharing, even the leftovers of our food, or whatever, that it goes to the for the benefit of somebody else, something else. Really recollecting those qualities of the sharing, any blessings that we create, or goodness that we do, consciously offering that for the benefit of others, dedications of merit, dedication of blessings. Those are, it's really, really helpful. The recollections of how we rely on other people and other things for our existence, for us to do something basic like eat a meal. We rely on the, particularly if we're in the monastery, we rely on all of it being given, offered, shared with us for us to actually partake. So it's completely dependent on other people's generosity and goodness. So to actually really recollect that. Even if it's one is in the world and one purchases everything oneself, one still relies on the sort of work and labor of many, many people for something like a meal to happen. It's just the complexity of the food chain is quite, if you start thinking about it, all the people that are involved for you to get just a meal of even a simple meal of rice and vegetables and tofu and then throw in a bit of fruit, sweet or something. You know, where does all those ingredients come from? I mean, people have worked, they've contributed their labor, that's all been, it comes from so many different places. So that and that's the people that produced it, then to actually get it to one's own, onto one's table, it involves just many, 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 many people. So that it, just recollecting that and having a sense of appreciation and gratitude for all of the efforts that have to go into that. So it's just that bringing things to mind that remind us of that we're not isolated beings that are actually completely independent and have no accountability or no connection with anybody or anything else, which is sometimes how it feels, you know, living in the human condition with the perversity of our minds, which can get obsessed in some pretty unskillful ways. So that, and you know, it can feel just totally isolated. But when we, you know, bring to mind those things, and particularly consciously bring to mind those qualities of sharing and recollections of dedications of blessings, and we start to get a whole different perspective of our life and what we can do with it. And in particular, really finding skillful means that encourages us to establish and maintain those states of mind that are bright, that are uplifted, that are and that's the definition of when the Buddha talks about different mental states or quality of action, and then he talks about it in terms of kusala and akusala. So kusala action or akusala action of body, speech and mind. It's not sort of looked at as, oh, that's good and bad, but it's sort of wholesome and unwholesome, or skillful and unskillful. And the distinct, say, the characteristic of the kusala kamma, or action, and it's the action which creates results, that wholesome, the nature of the wholesome is that it's associated with brightness, happiness, peacefulness, and a certain intelligence, discernment is functioning. And it's the nature of a wholesome mental state. The nature of an unwholesome mental state, which is unwholesome, unskillful, is that it's agitated, it's clouded, in the sense that it's not clear, there's a lack of clarity, there's an element of dukkha or suffering, discontent there, and it, you know, doesn't necessarily have to be really gross or extraordinarily strong, but even just subtle shades of the mind being clouded or just agitated, not settling, or not content, not seeing things clearly, not discerning things. It's all, those are our unwholesome mental states. And the wholesome, the kusala qualities are what are, are bright, are uplifting, are positive, which are nourishing and nurturing. And so that when we cultivate in practice, there isn't inclining toward the kusala and trying to support and encourage those qualities, and the leading away from the akusala. And that's actually what the say when the Buddha defines right effort. He doesn't define it by a particular action necessarily, but what or a extraordinary diligence in this and that. But he defines it as whatever action is for the refraining from the unwholesome that has arisen, that is right effort. Or the effort that is for the preventing of any unwholesome actions that have not yet arisen, because the effort to restrain or prevent those from arising is right effort. Or the effort that is for the bringing into being of wholesome qualities that have yet to arise. So any effort that is for bringing into being, making arise any wholesome qualities, that is right effort. Or the effort that is for maintaining any wholesome qualities that have already arisen, that's right effort. So it's all about the quality of the heart, the quality of our actions, is what right effort is about. It's not sort of some kind of some spectacular effort or some superhuman effort that's beyond any of us. It's about the nuances of what is wholesome and what is unwholesome, what is kusala and what is akusala, what is those qualities which are leading to well-being, to brightness, to discernment, and leading away from those qualities which are clouded, agitated, and don't see things clearly. So that being attentive to what is the effort that we bring up, or the actions which we encourage, or the actions which we engage our attention with. Those are the things which are laying the foundation for the quality of our being, and will determine whether we're experiencing happiness or we're experiencing suffering. And so that looking at just ordinary ways that we can be encouraging those things which are wholesome, just as the Buddha said, even just to the point of sharing leftover grains of rice is enough to create wholesome action. The things that would normally be thrown away and discarded and not really thought about, even that can be a basis for creating the wholesome causes for happiness. I'll offer that for reflection this evening.